podcasting for water, and tech for the geeks who will inherit the earth. Now, on A View from the Bunker. One of the first guests here in the bunker is a fellow that we've talked with before and a guy who we followed on the internet for quite some time. And this is actually not, we're sort of dual guesting here, I guess is the only way to describe it. He's the host of the Jesus Geek podcast, the original Jesus Geek, John Wilkerson. John, it's an honor to have an opportunity to talk with you again, especially in this setting where we're interviewing each other at the same time.
Yeah, I think this is it's kind of a unique situation. I don't think too many podcasters actually do that. Share the interview and just have a conversation and put it out there for everyone to hear. Maybe we'll start a trend or something.
Listen in on our private conversation, so we'll have to watch what we say, because it can and will be used against us in the court of public opinion. So. You've been doing the Jesus Geek podcast for a while, and by the way, feel free to stop me if I fall into my old interviewer habits here, because
Sure.
Know we're sharing time on each other's podcast here. I don't want to take over your show.
Sure.
But you've been doing the show for quite a while. How hard is it to come up with new topics to talk about regarding technology every week?
It's not really that hard. All I have to do is go to dig.com, and I usually get enough topics to talk about. I go there two or three times a week, and I have a bunch of RSS feeds that I follow. So getting those kind of general technology topics, it's not too tough. And usually what happens is occasionally I'll put something out and it comes from something that I read previously, and an idea comes up, whether it's a commentary or something like that. And when all else fails, do an interview, right?
So I see. So I'm filler.
No, you're not filler. No, it's just that I just like to share what I find interesting. And one of the things that I find interesting is people who are maybe not necessarily making a living yet off of writing books and self-publishing, but actually getting out there and doing it on their own, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you. I want to talk to Sharon too, but you explained to me that she doesn't really like to do the whole interview thing, and I understand that, But I'm sure we can
persuade her at some point. She's she's working on a couple of new projects too, and once she gets something new out there, then I'm sure we can persuade her and talk her into it. Especially for people we like you.
Oh, that's good to know. it's fascinating to me how people can self-publish these days. I know that when you all first started the whole podcasting thing, that was probably in March 2005 or April, somewhere around there.
I think it was late March of 2005. Podcasting had been around for about 6 months at that point.
Right. And you were actually with a publicist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then along in the process, you decided it was best to split off from them and start self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find, 10 years ago, you could have never done that. But now, because of the internet and because of the tools that are available to you, you're able to do that. So tell me what it's like to get started in publishing on your own and all, you guys go through the whole gamut of getting an ISBN number and everything, and some people don't do that, but you do that with your books. Tell me what it's like to start out and really kind of forget the standard way of doing publishing and do it on your own and do it over the internet the way that you and Sharon have.
Well, and this is interesting because it does – get back to your field of expertise, technology. The technology has really changed over the last 10 years, as you said. It was possible to self-publish, in a sense, 10 years ago, but it took a lot of money because you had to pay somebody upfront to print a bunch of books.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to pray that you would sell all those books and recoup your investment. Now, through websites like, or businesses like Lulu.com, you can publish a book on a through a print-on-demand technology that requires very little upfront money, which is good because we have very little upfront money. It's amazing because companies like Lulu, and there are others out there, I'm sure, others out there that we've researched, and we've been very happy with Lulu. And we were led to them, in fact, by other Christian authors who published through Lulu.com, like Peter Goodgame and David W. Lowe, authors of Red Moon Rising and Earthquake Resurrection, Then His Voice Shook the Earth. They were very, very pleased with the quality that came out of Lulu. And so we went with them. We've been very pleased, very happy. And we've actually done it both ways. Some of our books have ISBN numbers, but a couple of them don't. Iron Dragons, my first novel, does not. The current novel, The God Conspiracy, does. Sharon's first two novels have ISBN numbers. Of course, those are the ones published through the publisher that we were with 5 years ago.
It was Mythark Radio, right?
Yes,
is that right?
That's right. We started out with Mythark. And then decided that we wanted the podcast to be about a little more than just the books. Sharon's current novel, Signs and Wonders, does not have an ISBN number. So we can go either way.
Okay.
The main advantage of having one is that if you've got an ISBN number, you can be your books can be sold through traditional channels like Amazon.com, if you can call, the internet traditional. It almost seems traditional now, like it's been around forever. I've forgotten the days when you actually had to go in a car or on the bus to a store and actually go in and look through a bunch of books and find them that way. But without an ISBN number, your book doesn't show up in the distribution channels that serve the big chains and the local bookstores, so on and so forth. Now, having said that, kind of toot Sharon's horn a little bit. Signs and Wonders, even though it does not have an ISBN number, was picked up by Amazon.com.
Oh, nice.
They recognized it as a consistent seller at Lulu. And I guess for that reason, they opted to pick it up and offer it for sale to Amazon customers. So now, in order to get Signs and Wonders, you don't need to go through the traditional channel. Now, how difficult was it? The most difficult part of the process is actually getting the manuscript together. And there are a few steps to that. You write the first draft, and then you have to go back and rewrite it, and then rewrite it again. And then I found in my case that it was best to rewrite it again, or at least go back another editing pass. And it's I realized it's similar to sculpting. You start with a lump of clay, and that's the hard part for me because I want the product – as it's coming out the first time to look like the finished product, and I have to get over that still. I think established authors would agree that the first draft is supposed to be lousy. You're just going for word count. It's sort of like, the buffet where you just pile a bunch of stuff on the plate. It doesn't have to be good. You're just looking for a lot of it,
Right.
And then as you begin to sculpt the manuscript, you begin taking away the stuff that doesn't quite fit. And thankfully, I happen to be married to an excellent editor. Sharon did a marvelous job on The God Conspiracy, which was to have been published by our previous publisher as part of the Laodicea Chronicles series. They, in fact, got to the point where it was in the editing process when things, for whatever reason, I'm still not quite sure, just didn't work out, and we decided it was best to part company. But Sharon did a much better job on editing, I think, than anyone else that I can imagine, in part because some of the characters in The God Conspiracy were borrowed from her novels, as we're writing in the same fictional universe, but independently of one another, continuity becomes a little tricky. So she was able to spot things that I had written into characters that contradicted things that she had written about the characters. And she also added some real color to some of the characters in the book. In short, The God Conspiracy is a much stronger novel than it might have been if it had been in someone else's hands. So, and on top of that, Sharon is also a wonderful graphic designer and artist. She came up with a cover for The God Conspiracy that I think would look right at home next to anything else you'd find in the bookstore.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. That is one thing that I've noticed about when she does the covers for her own books and things like that. I look at them and I say, wow, you know, I mean,
yeah.
You can go to any bookstore and you could put her cover designs right up next to any professionally done book and you wouldn't know the difference. You absolutely wouldn't know the difference.
So, I mean, that is an advantage that I have and that Sharon has that others may not. But there are, you know, ways that other authors can get around that. I mean, there are talented artists out there who are willing to do the graphic design for a reasonable fee. There are editing services out there. In fact, I'll be talking with one of the principals in a Christian-oriented editing and polishing service called The Finishers this weekend, Frank Creed, who specializes in that, you know, taking that rough lump of clay and rounding it into shape. So you can hire out if you don't have the talent in-house, as I am blessed with,
right.
In order to get it to that point. And then the final obstacle is putting the actual manuscript in a form that is print-ready. And when you go with a service like Lulu.com, you can pay them to do it for you, but you obviously save a lot of money if you do it yourself. And again, Sharon is gifted enough with, MS Word and OpenOffice that she can take the manuscript and actually compile it in a form that looks the same way it's going to look when they print it out. So it is a lot of work, and there's no question about that, but you can do it. And it just takes a little time, a little dedication, and thankfully both of us enjoy telling stories enough that we're willing to put in that work. But I think more than that, and this is the reason we started doing this 5 years ago, is that we feel really led by the things we see in the world around us to try to tell stories that we hope will get people thinking about the nature of the world around us, that things aren't quite as they seem with our naked eyes, that there is a supernatural world around us, and that the Bible is our guidebook to the supernatural.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the thing I really like about your writing is that you're not heavy-handed with the gospel message. It's definitely in there, and you can definitely tell that the characters that you have in there are Christians, and I mean, especially in the God conspiracy, it's very clear. But it's not done in a way. It's not kind of tacked on or done in an annoying way. It's done in a way of this is your neighbor, and he happens to go to that Jesus church down the street there, and I really. It's hard to find writing like that because you go down to your local Christian bookstore and it's all sugary, sweet, and coated, and it's just not believable. It's not real. It's not how people really live as Christians. And I know that there are some people that go around saying amen and Jesus and hallelujah after every sentence they say, but for the most part, people don't. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about your writing. The other thing I enjoy and the thing that I've noticed which you've done recently with Iron Dragons and the God Conspiracy is you began publishing them through Patio Books.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of authors have had success the other way around. They have podcasted the book first and then gotten a publishing deal, whereas you've decided to, we're going to put the print book out there, we're going to make it on demand, and then we're going to give them the free audio version of this book should they wish to wait the however many months it takes for the book to finish. Tell me about your decision to do that, because I remember I had kind of recorded a few pilot chapters of Iron Dragons, and we had talked a little bit about possibly doing it, and things just didn't work out. What made you finally decide, I'm just going to go ahead and do this and see what happens?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I feel that you did a marvelous job with the chapters that you recorded.
Oh, thank you.
And that always kind of tickled in the back of my mind, but I just thought, well, there were a few things that entered into the decision. First of all was, why are we doing this? If we were doing this to get rich, to live off the writing and become highly paid authors, well, first of all, the odds of that happening are pretty slim. It's like about the same as the odds of a high school baseball player making it to the major leagues. Secondly, I mean, if we were trying to do that, though, we wouldn't be writing in the Christian fiction genre. We'd be writing, you know, stuff like Dan Brown writes, you know.
Right, right.
Take the truth and twist it to scratch itching ears, you know. So that's not the purpose. Secondly, the fact of the matter is most of the world doesn't know or care who Derek P. Gilbert is. And that being the case, if they should happen to stumble across a listing for Iron Dragons or The God Conspiracy at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or if someday these books appear in the brick-and-mortar stores, the odds of them deciding to put down 15 or 20 bucks on a trade paperback from a guy they've never heard of are pretty slim.
Right.
Especially today, with the economy the way it is, disposable income is at a premium. Books are getting more expensive. And when you go print on demand, you've got more control over the product, true, but you also have higher per unit cost, which is why The God Conspiracy is listed at $24.95, which is really high. It's not that we're getting a lot more money for each copy sold or that we're trying to, you know, get a lot of money for each copy sold. It's just that when you're printing a 400-page trade paperback, one at a time, instead of in a run of 10,000, the cost per unit is high. So
right.
My point is that somebody who doesn't know who I am isn't likely to gamble 25 bucks on a book. If they've got a choice between, say, my new novel and the new novel by someone they've actually heard of and read before, like Frank Peretti, Ted Decker, you know, someone of that caliber or that genre. So how do we get the message out there that we're trying to spread? Well, one way to do that was by offering a much lower cost ebook version. I do think ebooks are a wave of the future.
And I think so too.
And so we've made PDF versions, PDF editions of all of our novels available through Lulu.com and now through Amazon for Amazon's Kindle reader. So, you know, while you may not want to spend, you know, $15, $20, $25 on a novel, if you can read it on your computer, you know, $5, that's not much of a risk. If you've got a Kindle
right.
reader, you know, $8, that's, again, that's still not unreasonable.
Right.
But then if we can put the podcast out there, and this was essentially an experiment I decided to try with Iron Dragons. The novel had been out there for about 3 years, and honestly, it sold about as well as you'd expect for a novel that had no marketing push behind it because we don't have a major publisher behind it, and we don't have money out there to buy advertising where readers might find out about it. So thought, all right, well, let's try the podcasting thing. I mean, I was a professional radio broadcaster for 15 years, not an actor or a voice actor, but I know a little bit about reading with inflection. So
sure.
did the novel, and well, let's just say that a lot more people, many more people downloaded the novel than bought copies of the novel. And actually saw a few people actually apparently went back and started buying the novel because we started to see sales on Iron Dragons. A few copies here and there picked up again. So while that was nice, again, the whole point was to put a story out there that had a message of faith and sacrifice. If you could boil down the novel in one word, it was a 300-page excuse to make the point that greater love hath no man than this, that he'd be willing to lay down his life for his friends.
Right.
Now, none of the protagonists actually died in the book, but there were at least one who was very willing to do so should the occasion arose. And that was the whole point of the novel. The God Conspiracy is, again, the same lines. I like to put the message out there that there are that intelligent evil is loose in the world and seeks to do us harm. But and not only is, well, I could go on and take up the rest of the interview with it, but the point is to get the message out there more so than to sell copies of the book. Now, how do we do that with no money? You know, through the one thing we do have, which is time, and thankfully the equipment now, getting back to your area of expertise, the technology that any one of us here at home can invest a few dollars in addition to the PC and record a podcast, record a novel, record and get the message out there for the whole world.
Sure, sure. Are you planning to podcast any of Sharon's books? Or
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Signs and Wonders will be next, and she's doing some editing on the edition, so there'll be a new edition of Signs and Wonders, slightly tweaked, coming out, and that will be podcast and also released for Amazon's Kindle.
Excellent. Excellent. This is going to sound like an odd question. Have you been approached by anyone to request movie rights on the books?
No.
Either you or Sharon? No, really. I find that interesting because I think they would make, if you could find the right person to make the movie, especially the God conspiracy because of the climate these days, I think that it would really make for a great movie, even from a Christian house, because there's not a lot of special effects that are required in the book. And it's really, like I said, personally, I think it's a great story. I was very, very entertained by it. After I sprained my ankle, I had plenty of time to read, and that's pretty much what I did was read the God conspiracy. So it was.
Well, good. That's glad to know that I rank higher than the ankle sprain. I appreciate that.
Oh, it just happened to be good timing. You know, you sent me the review copy, and mm-hmm. I sprained my ankle. So
it captive
worked
audience.
Out pretty well. Yeah. It worked out pretty well. I was actually surprised to get that in my inbox. I was very surprised to get that, and pleasantly surprised. I was, oh, wow,
good.
That's great. So. Well, do you have any questions
well,
for
Cloud,
me?
Well, if Cloud 10 Pictures is listening, we certainly would be open to discussing that possibility.
There you go. There you go.
Well, yeah, there's something that you've been doing, John, that, I'll be honest, I should have been paying more attention to because it strikes me as a way for this sort of virtual gathering that has sort of come together through the internet to help out people without requiring an awful lot on our part. And this is your podcasting for water effort, your
yes.
cause. What is that about?
Well, basically, it goes back to about late November last year when my pastor was talking about a project that was going on online and the purpose of which was to raise money during the Christmas season to drill wells in developing countries to provide clean water to people. And I had looked it over and read about it and kind of pushed it to the side. And then suddenly in around mid-December, it kind of came up again, and I just couldn't escape it. And I said to myself, this is something that I think really the podcasting community could really get behind, because at the time the big thing that was being promoted was that it only takes $1, just $1, and you can give someone clean water for an entire year. And I thought, man, anybody can do that. So I had interviewed someone from Living Water International, and we had talked about it, and I said, well, I'm going to raise money. So I decided to do this podcasting for water. And admittedly, it's been kind of a slow start. I had hoped to have more podcasters involved by now, and just simply kind of coming up with some creative ways to raise the money. And like I said, it really doesn't take much. My goal is $15,000 by the end of the year. And with the number of podcasters that I know, if even half of their listeners donated $1, we'd have it. Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter of getting the message out there and getting it to them and coming up with a way to get them to respond, because a lot of people don't want to charge $1 on their credit card. Yeah. I don't know why. It doesn't cost them any more than it costs anyone else. So God really, really just put it on my heart when after I did the interview and after I started studying it a little bit more and realized how there are so many things that people in churches are passionate about, but they don't really impact people the way that it should. Mm-hmm. And providing clean water to people is one of the things that can really change someone's life around. You know, I pray for a pastor in Malawi, Africa right now who he has 6 or 7 children in his household. 3 or 4 of them are orphans, and they don't have clean water at all. They have to go to a river and, you know, schlep dirty water up, and that's what they drink, what they use to bathe with, what they use to wash their clothes with. And it's really, you know, we take it for granted that we can just walk over to our sink and turn a little knob and clean water comes out. Mm-hmm. I mean, even me, I recently put up a video on YouTube showing what the water looks like that comes out of my well before it gets filtered. And I don't know if you
saw that. I did see that, and that's it was kind of an eye opener because that's here in the United States. If you didn't have the technology for the filter, you'd be drinking what looked like weak tea.
Well, it actually looks worse in person. It's gray.
Oh.
It has clay in it. And it also has there's also methane infused in it as well.
Oh.
So the water comes out. It's a 700-foot deep well, and it goes into a holding tank, and then to allow some of the methane to purge out of it, mm-hmm. and then comes into the house. And you know, I add chlorine to it, and I add another chemical that makes the clay coagulate. Then I have 2 120-gallon tanks that allows the clay to settle in, and then it goes through 2 charcoal filters, and it comes out clean. Mm-hmm. But you know, this pastor in Africa, he has no way to do that. He has no way to take the water, the dirty water out of the river and filter it. If he had some clean t-shirts, he could do a decent job of doing it. Mm-hmm. But he probably doesn't. If he's got a shirt, he's certainly not going to use it to filter water with. He's, you know,
yeah. Now, because, you say he's in Malawi?
He's in Malawi, Africa, yes.
Malawi, the average life expectancy there is what, about 39?
Yes, yeah. It is low. It is very low. Our church, our pastor goes over there sometimes twice a year. We bring Bibles in their native language. And one of the things that they're also doing over there is they're teaching them how to study the Bible. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times what happens in Africa is missionaries come in and, they lead people to Christ, mm-hmm. and then they leave, and there's no discipleship, unfortunately, which is sad, because there's a lot of witchcraft and other kind of pagan worship that goes on in Africa, and that starts to get blended in, mm-hmm. with the Christianity over there. So they go over every year. And they hold a conference, and they teach the pastors how to study the Bible and do it really basically, really simply, just saying, start at the beginning of a book of the Bible and just read it through and just teach it to your congregation that way. Don't worry about trying to do topical studies, because you're going to hit every topic if you do it that way. Mm-hmm. They provide them, you know, they give them real solid doctrinal, biblical doctrinal foundations, and providing them the Bibles is is really important, because sometimes between four or five villages, they may have parts of a Bible to share. I mean, it's literally like it was, you know, in the first century with the church, is you had scraps of things that you shared among congregations. And there's a lot of other things that we do over there as well. And that was just, but the deal with water just really, really, you know, God just put it on my heart. And I really felt like this was something that we could do. You know, I live in Saratoga Springs, New York. And even if I didn't have water that I could get out of the tap, I could go to Saratoga Park, where there is clean, filtered water, spring water that comes out and fill it. And as a matter of fact, I do. I have huge 5-gallon jugs that I take there from my water cooler. Mm-hmm. And I fill it up. And it's clean, and it comes right up out of the ground, and, you know, it's 100% all natural, you know, no artificial sweeteners or flavorings, you know.
What are you, some kind of patriot wacko?
Yeah. But the pod, again, you know, the podcasting for water, just my whole idea was to reach as many people as possible and to just get them to give a little. They don't need to give a lot, because, you know, many hands makes the burden light.
Sure.
And
what does Living Water International do specifically to bring water to these communities?
What they do is they go to a developing country and they actually dig wells. Okay. And depending on where they are, depends on the type of well that they can dig. For example, they're trying to put a well in India right now, and they only need about $5,000 or $7,000 there. It's a hand pump well. It doesn't have to be very deep there, because water table is higher. But for example, in Africa, they have to dig deeper, and depending on the number of people they want to service with the well also depends on the kind of equipment that they put there. Mm-hmm. And when I spoke with the representative from LWI, he says the math actually works out. He says basically most of these wells will last anywhere between 5 and 7 years after they're installed. And when you divide, you know, the number of people that are serviced, you know, and times the number of years it comes out, I think he said to like 97.5 or 98 cents per person. Hmm. For a year's worth of water. And then actually after the first 5 years, then when they go and service it, the price drops even lower. So you're looking at, you know, if they go in and refurbish a well for, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, it's going to work for another mm-hmm. five to seven years, and the price just drops dramatically after that. So it's really a small amount of money that we really need. I mean, I think they had something on their website a while back. I don't know if it's there anymore, but they said it would probably take anywhere between $100 to $300 million to solve most of the world's water problems. It's that little. I mean, when you look at the tarp,
that's exactly what I was thinking. Compared to the amount that we're spending to bail out the auto companies, the mortgage lenders, and the investment bankers, this is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, absolutely, it absolutely is. And
you know, just allow me to rant for just a moment here. This
sure.
is why Jesus said, the poor you will always have with you. It's not because Jesus was a pessimist. It's because Jesus knew that the human heart better than any other man alive before or since. And he knew that there would always be those who managed to contrive things so that they get more. You know, the poor you will always have with you, because there are those at the top of the pyramid, and I use that word deliberately, who continue to withhold from those below. It's not a distribution problem we have in this world when it comes to food, water. It's a sin problem.
So, okay. Oh, absolutely.
Back off the soapbox there. So $100 to $300 million would solve the water problem for most of those in the world who need it?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I believe that's right. I may be wrong on those numbers. It may be higher, but still, I know it's less than a billion. So,
and even at a billion, that's still
it's
again,
nothing.
It's cheap compared to what we're spending. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Warren Buffett could write the check for it. Okay, mm-hmm. I mean, or Bill Gates could easily write the check, and mm-hmm. you know, the problem would be solved for most of the world.
Before I get to my next question, let me just jump in with an aside. Here in central Indiana, as we record this, a little past 10 in the evening Eastern time on June the 19th of 2009, we've got some pretty severe thunderstorms that are coming into our area here over the next 20 or 30 minutes or so. So if something should happen to interrupt the broadcast, it's probably just the weather. So
okay.
Let me just jump in and because we're recording this electronically, and if the computer loses power, obviously, we may have to splice things together later on. So,
what? You don't have a diesel generator hooked up to the bunker there?
Well, you know, no, we don't. Back to Living Waters International? Are there certain areas of the world that they target?
Africa. India, they are starting to target South America as well. Let me see here. Let me pull up their website here real quick.
There's some pretty large aquifers in South America. The Guarani Aquifer, in fact, I think is one of the largest freshwater aquifers in the world.
Yeah, but the problem is so much of it is there are areas that are so underdeveloped that yep. they can't actually get the water to them.
And there are also large tracts of land in and around that aquifer that are owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon.
No, yeah.
Seriously. Yeah, that, not a coincidence, that, I don't think.
They actually even go into Mexico. A lot of Romania. They go into Romania. Most of where they are right now are African countries. That is where the need is the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
But they do go into, like I said, India, El Salvador, Brazil. You wouldn't think with all the commercials you see now for Brazilian products that they have a water problem, but they do, actually.
There's every bit as large a gap between the haves and the have-nots in Brazil as there is in the United States. Probably
yes.
more so. Probably more so.
Yes.
Yep.
So, there's a number of different products. You know, I'm just looking right here. It's at the top of the list. They have Angola here.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that 56% of the country lacks clean water. 70% of the people there are below the poverty line. And life expectancy there is 38 years. And the infant mortality rate is 185 deaths per 1,000 live births. So
that's huge.
18.5% or yeah, 18.5%.
That is huge.
So it's huge.
Well, go ahead.
I mean, you know, we'll go with Brazil. Obviously, it's not that bad. They say there's about 10% of the population there that's lacking clean water. But they still have a even they have a high infant mortality rate, which is 23 deaths per 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of different places that they go to, but for the most part, it is Africa. I asked them in the interview, if they were planning to do anything after Katrina and Rita went through, and he said that they really try and only focus on countries that don't have the resources to actually restore clean water or provide clean water,
mm-hmm.
Which actually makes sense. He says there's just so many locations that, and there's just not enough people to go around and service it. Because I asked him about that, I said, when he mentioned how much it would cost, I said, well, that's nothing. He goes, yeah, but the problem is getting there. You know, some of the countries can be somewhat hostile.
Mm-hmm.
to you coming in, you know, especially since they're a Christian organization. They certainly don't do anything and say, well, you have to be a Christian to use this well. But, mm-hmm. you know, obviously some people do take exception to them coming in and preaching the gospel.
Yeah, proselytizing.
So, yeah.
Are there things that Living Water International does other than digging wells? I read, for example, that that actually providing rain barrels and plastic sheets to collect rainwater would be of great use to people in certain parts of Africa, more so even than, say, mosquito nets.
Right. I think for now, right now, what they do is just drill wells. Mm-hmm. They also do provide education, obviously, on, you know, boil your water, okay. and things like that. It's amazing to me that, this is one of the largest killers of people, especially children, in the whole world, is unclean water, because they just get all kinds of diseases from it. Mm-hmm. You know, they tell you when you go to Mexico, don't drink the water. And they tell you that for a reason. It's true wherever, you know, anytime you go on a mission trip, they tell you don't drink the, you know, only drink bottled water. Mm-hmm. They can build up a resistance to the bacteria that's in the water. But it's getting to the point where they can live long enough, because when they do get sick, there's no medicine, there's no one to take care of them. So if you can provide them with clean water and prevent them from getting sick, then you've already given them a step up. And when you think about where civilization started, you know, in the Fertile Crescent there, mm-hmm. Why did it blossom there? Because it was rich in water.
Yeah.
If civilization had started in an arid region, it would not have grown at the rate that it had. You know, God knew what he was doing when he put man uh-huh. in that area, because you have to, water is important. You know, it's important for trade. It's important for growing crops, you know, growing food. It's important for everything. In a modern society, in a Western society, we don't think about that, because, again, it's like I said, you just turn on a tap, or, you know, if you're out in public, there's public water fountains all over the place, and there's plumbing, and, you know, no one thinks about how the plumbing got there. It's just there.
Yeah. Even in parts of the country where water is more of an issue, out in the West, in the Southwest, you still have enough there that you sort of take it for granted. You can turn on a tap and you've got something that you can drink, and it is, you know, impossible to live without water. I mean, you can go without food for a while, but water, you can't make it even a few days without it.
Right.
And, as you mentioned, John, a lot of the world is dealing without, is doing without clean water. You know, it's a quality of life issue. Well, frankly, it's just a life issue, period. And, how many podcasters have supported you in this so far?
Taylor is doing something right now where if you call into his podcast mm-hmm. and give him your name and say, give Dave the cup, give Dave the Elvis cup, he is going to donate $1 for every voicemail that he gets.
And that would be Taylor Kent, the snarky Avenger.
The snarky Avenger, yeah. Yep. You've had him on the show a couple times.
Right.
Brad and Faith McFadden over at My Life Ministries they raised some money. And we have and we should probably get you in this group. We have a Christian new media group that we started some time ago. And we are currently working on a couple projects. We're going to do kind of a telethon type thing where 1 week everyone is going to talk about the project and raising money for it. But a lot of different podcasters have played my water promo and mm-hmm. have mentioned the website. So they've certainly been helping out, and I have some tentative plans. I'm not 100% sure I'm going to be able to do this yet, but I have some tentative plans to do a 12 or 24 hour marathon podcast, in the fall to raise funds. So, and that would be just kind of either me or me interviewing people, but getting the technology set up and getting everything coordinated and finding a location to do it, because my home isn't really good for that when you have seven children running around. So,
oh, that could be really interesting, John, especially if you do it on camera on Ustream TV. That would really be something.
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely put links to all these in the show notes, both at your site and at ours. So we'll direct people to not only JesusGeek.info, but you've got a group that you've started at Facebook.
Yes, there's a Facebook page, and water.JesusGeek.info has information there on kind of why I'm doing this. It has a link to the water promo. A new thing that I'm going to try out. I just started. I did this over lunch today. Is if people have any old technology that still has some decent residual value, throw that thing up on eBay, and you're not using it anyway, so sell it and donate the money, or send it to me and I'll put it up on eBay. Whatever.
So we're talking old technology, old computers, old TVs, old PDAs, cell phones.
Yeah, but something that still has some residual value. You know, a lot of people are replacing their iPhones because a new iPhone is out, and more than likely, most people are going to, give that iPhone to someone they know or something like that. But why not put it on eBay and auction it? You know, you're not going to be out any more money necessarily, and it'll go to a good cause. Or maybe you've got an old iPod sitting there, a broken iPod you can get $100 for. because people buy them for parts to repair them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I was looking a while back. I got the crazy idea a couple years ago. Why don't I buy a couple broken iPods off of eBay mm-hmm. and piece them together? Well, some of these broken iPods were going for 50% of the cost of a brand new one. So I said, well, we'll skip that idea.
I'll end up paying.
Yeah.
But you're right. If you can do that and you can make some money to help out a wonderful cause, then that makes a lot of sense. Certainly more than just pitching it in the trash, especially because the EPA doesn't like you throwing away those old electronics with those heavy toxic metals and those little electronic-y parts inside.
Right, exactly, exactly. And you know, it'll go to someone who will use it, and then the money, like I said, the money can go really to a really good cause. So hopefully that will get a little bit of traction. And I have some old Blackberries that I'm going to probably throw up on eBay this weekend that I've acquired, because people have just they've traded up to a new one, and even if I get just $20 for them, that is certainly more money that can go towards the cause. So
now, John, just changing gears now, and again, just a reminder to listeners that we'll put links to the website so you can find out more about podcasting for water and how you can contribute. But just a little more about the Jesus Geek and your show. How long have you been doing the show now?
I have been doing it since November of 2005. When you and Sharon actually are what convinced me to do it. When you first started podcasting, you were saying, anybody can do this. If we can do it, anyone can do it. And so when I actually first started the podcast, my idea was to direct it more towards homeschooling families.
I remember that. Yeah.
Now if I started that, it probably would take off like wildfire. Mm-hmm. But back then there weren't a lot of homeschoolers who really kind of, I mean, they knew what a computer was, but mm-hmm. podcasting was just, what? What's that?
It was still very new. It was still very new, yeah.
Yes, and I believe you started podcasting actually before iTunes started carrying podcasts.
Yes, we did.
If I remember correctly, because they started carrying it in the summer or something like that.
Right.
The summer of 2005.
When they started carrying them at the iTunes store, I remember very clearly that they were soliciting for people to list their podcasts. So, yeah, I remember that.
Right. I started in November 2005, and the show has gone through several different transformations. I did a biweekly show once. I did a daily show. I've done it differently, had different segments, just kind of trying different things out. But it's always kind of come back to technology. And my biggest thing right now is that, you know, I'm not a tech insider. I know technology, but unlike, you know, Leo Laporte and all the folks over there at Twit TV, I don't work in the industry. So I don't have people coming to me saying, oh, won't you talk about my product on your show? Or won't you talk about this great new technology on your show?
Or more importantly, wouldn't you like a free sample of this new technology so you can talk about it on your show?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
rats.
And I, you know, that's not to say that they are swayed in their decision to like a product when they get a free demo. However, it's a lot easier to find out if you like something if you get a free something to like.
Instead of having to figure out how to budget for it and pay for it, yeah.
Right. And at one point, I was actually going to try that. I was actually going to try and start soliciting manufacturers for demo units because a lot of people say, you know, what's it going to hurt if you ask? If you ask 100 people, 100 different people, you may get 10 of them. We'll send you a product. Well, if you do one product review a month, you've got 10 months covered right there with 10 different products. So, but I decided I don't want a bunch of gadgets kicking around the house. And as much as I like gadgets, I have little kids, and then the gadgets will break. And
well, and at some point, you got to put the gadgets down and play with your kids.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So,
and I suspect that not being on the cutting edge like those guys are makes your show more relevant to real people who aren't going to be on the cutting, you know, the bleeding edge, getting every new toy that comes down the pike.
I think so. I think that's, you know, one of the things about me is, you know, we have one computer in the house that connects to the internet, and that's it. And the thing is almost 5 years old now. I have laptops, but they're from work, so I can't claim them as my own, although I do get to use them for personal use. One day they're going to have to go back to the to the university where I work. So so it's not like it's and even the laptops are now pushing 3 years old. But I do try and look at technology from a perspective of what is the average person going to be interested in? What are some of the things that are going to interest them that they can afford, that they can get for free? Mm-hmm. I'm all about the free, believe me. and I think that, you know, like I said, that gives it a little bit of a different twist for a technology show.
Best free thing that you found within the last couple of weeks?
Best free thing that I found, Songbird.
Songbird.
Songbird is an alternative to iTunes.
Hmm.
If you have iTunes on the machine, you can put Songbird on there. It'll find all the music in iTunes and move it over. It's not as bloated. It's free. The only strike that I would give against it right now is that it doesn't do RSS subscriptions very well yet. But from what I understand, it is slated to get an upgrade and get that fixed in the summer. But it will sync your iPod, it will sync your Windows Media Player, you know, any kind of USB-based media player, it will synchronize with. So you don't get locked out because you have to have the Apple product if you're using iTunes, or if you're not using iTunes, you can't use your Apple product, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and it works on PC, Mac, and Linux. So it's cross-platform. And I'm operating system agnostic, so I say use what works or what you can afford, whichever, yeah. You know, whichever comes first.
Amen to that. I've got a Mac on my right and a Windows Vista machine on my left here as we sit and talk here tonight. Well, I want to wrap this up here in the next couple of minutes, so let's run down the laundry list of websites. JesusGeek.info, is that sort of the web hub for John Wilkerson?
JesusGeek.info is the hub. Water.JesusGeek.info is information about the Podcasting for Water project that I have. There's a link there to the cause on Facebook. The URL is too long and complicated to read out because, unfortunately, I don't have one of those fancy causes.com URLs. I don't rate for that, I guess. but those are the two locations. Of course, I'm twitter.com/ the OJG. The original Jesus Geek. Uh-huh. If you want to keep in touch with me personally, if you want to keep in touch with what's going on the blog / podcast, it'd be twitter.com/JesusGeek.
Okay. And my site is DerekPGilbert.com. That's DerekPGilbert. And from there, well, and the podcast, and we've got websites coming out. Between that and PIDradio.com and peeringintodarkness.com, you'll find out everything that Sharon and I are doing, which is a lot. We like to keep our minds occupied. So we're losing power here. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
All right. Well, maybe that's a sign that we just beat the thunderstorms here. Yeah, we're getting some flashes here. And looking at the radar here, the heaviest of what's coming our way is just about on top of our town. So we probably should close. John, okay. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you. We hadn't talked with you in a podcast setting since you were down there at Bay St. Louis. So good to talk with you again ear to ear.
Well, yes.
Sort of.
It's great, and I looked up Shelbyville on Google Maps, and I realized that you're an hour within Indianapolis Speedway. So I may have a reason to come and visit you.
That's very true. Yeah, less than that actually. We actually have people staying here in our town for the 500.
Oh really? Oh, they stay there, huh?
We're only 20 miles. So
yeah. Okay. So
come on out. We'll show you the site.
Excellent. Too bad it's a 13-hour drive from where I am in New York.
There you go. John Wilkerson, the original Jesus Geek, JesusGeek.info, and his various and assorted sites from there. And pleasure to have you on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
It's been a pleasure, Derek, and I hope that we can talk again.
And thank you for joining us for this hour of conversation. You'll find the show notes posted at my website, DerekPGilbert.com. That's DerekPGilbert.com. And if you have any questions, comments, or criticisms, address those to Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.